All right, so I think it is past 11 o'clock now. Yes, the clock says so. I'm Jeff Bates. I'm more commonly known as Hemos on Slashdot. What I'm actually doing today, though, is not about Slashdot. We, in conjunction, we being OSDN, in conjunction with the Boston Consulting Group, did a statistical survey of open source developers. Historically, there's been lots of anecdotal evidence that people who like to call themselves open source sociologists like to say, well, I know this person who does this thing, so therefore I'm going to make a quantitative statement about how all open source developers operate, what their motivations are, and all of that good stuff. What we have done is actually gone through and done a survey of, I think it ended up being a little over 1,100 randomly selected developers, running through all the normal statistic analysis and all of that good stuff, to produce probably what, at least from what I can tell, is some of the few hard data that's out there. Some of the other groups that have done it is FLOSS and other organizations like that. And based on the amount of requests that come into my inbox, I think that a lot of other academic institutions are starting to do this. As you can see, there's four names on here and there's one person up here. I do not have four personalities. The other people here, Kareem Lakhani is a student at MIT who also works at the Boston Consulting Group. Bob Wolf is a partner at the Boston Consulting Group, and well, probably a lot of you know Chris DeBona, and Chris just is what Chris is. So agenda, there's a fair amount here that actually will be non-applicable for people here since they actually know what open source is and are involved in it, so I'll probably skip through a fair amount of that. Probably, unless there's a quantitative question that you have while we're going through, I'd like to hold the questions until the end and then we can debate some of the more interesting parts of the data that comes out of it. So, overview of the key findings. Part of why we actually did this is because for those of you who work in non-IT sectors, you probably encountered some of this, is that for a lot of organizations out there, pharmaceutical, scientific research and things like that, they have put a massive amount of effort and a massive amount of money in the last 15 years into trying to get people to be more creative and to create more within their jobs. Company Pfizer, for instance, which is one of the largest pharma companies in the world, spends $3 billion a year, US billion a year on R&D, and their drug pipeline is still drying up. So for a lot of organizations, the whole creativity that comes out of the open source movement, all the work that has been done by people who, you know, for the most part are non-paid, is something that's of key interest to them. What motivates hackers? Fun, skill, freedom, need, increasing knowledge, and is the biggest benefit that was identified by the group, and losing sleep is the biggest cost, actually. Who are these people? Volunteers for the most part, also professionals, and then the demographics are Generation X, which essentially means, for the most part, people between, say, ages 22 to 36. How does the community function? Strong self-identification, global effort, and then the leadership model, as a lot of you know, is peer leadership. Just a side note, that this document, actually, I'll give the URL at the end. This is downloadable. It's under the free document license 1.1, so you can take, do whatever you want with. All right. So, well, we'll skip this part. Skip that part. So the open source principles, and this is going to be fairly mundane for a lot of people. Intellectual property, code should always be open. Free speech, not free beer. And that's one of the more interesting findings, actually, is that when you do a full level analysis of who the people in the open source community are, the free software camp is significantly smaller than the people who believe in open source as more of a idea of how things should operate, copyleft, and then trying to ensure that their work remains in the copyleft by using the copyleft. The paradigm of developer is a unparalleled amount of interchange between the users and developers. And compare it to any other groups and you find it extremely difficult to find other kind of social organizations where people are the users and the developers. The closest one you can actually find is the motorcycle community. where you have a significant amount of people who do a significant amount of work to their bikes and are the users and the developers thereof. Release early, release often, and modularized code. So the resource model. A lot of people who come from outside the community really have no idea why these people are doing these things. And I think, you know, the old saying of, you know, scratching the developer's itch is the best way to understand that. The three obligations that were found when we did the statistical analysis is to give, receive, and reciprocate, which really plays into the whole peer leadership idea of, rather than sticking with the traditional hierarchical model, is a person is a leader because they demonstrated qualities that make them fit to be leader. And it's typically not done through any direct voting mechanism, but it's an extreme meritocracy. SourceForge, is anyone in here not familiar with SourceForge? All right, good, that was easy. The numbers actually on here are a little bit off. SourceForge now has about 600,000 users or so, and the hosted projects is up to about 60,000 as well. I wear a number of hats at my job. One of them is I'm Hemos and Slashdot. I also run all the rest of the sites that are within OSDN, of which SourceForge is one. Some of the more interesting numbers of SourceForge is there's 60,000 projects. Of course, there's always a question of how many of those projects are actually have ongoing activity. And even if you take the harshest metrics for it, it's still about 10,000 projects that are under active development. There's things going on. Now, it's kind of a depressing number when you just figure that's, you know, one in six or something like that. But the reality is if you compare that to other active software development areas, it is an astounding number of people and the amount of time that goes into it. And this is just on SourceForge. This isn't Savanna or people hosting on their university servers or anything like that. So the study itself, the meat, as it were. So what we did is there we did two tracks and 10% random selection of alpha and beta production projects. We did this because, we could identify mature projects and things like that, but a lot of people have already done analysis of, Apache or the Linux kernel or things like that. So the more interesting part, I think, in the long range point of view is, what are the projects starting now? What are they going to be the ones that are going to be the production level projects in a year or so? Personal email links sent out to the 1,648 developers. Then received 526 response rate. 34% looks like a low number. Usually for any sort of academic study, you're looking for about a 10% response rate. So this is a pretty astounding number at that point. This project has been going on for about the last 2 years or so. Then we did mature projects with two or more, 573, same sort of response rate, which is, again, pretty astounding. So the question's why people do these things. This project is as most creative as anything I've done, which is a pretty interesting result, because you compare this against how people operate in their jobs, and you're looking essentially at an inverse result if you compare it to what people do at their jobs. What people do at their jobs, they do because they're paid, they need the benefits, they do whatnot, because they have to. And the reason people are doing these things is because of their interest. The other comparisons, when I program, I lose track of time. I don't know if all of you have read the guide to the show. There's a comment on there at the bottom of the page from Matt Welsh that talks about the only two ways to get people out of deep hack mode are to either strike them with lightning or, even worse, strike the computer with lightning. So I think what's interesting is you bring that into like composing poetry or music. And Alan Cox yesterday was wearing his code poet shirt. And I think that that's true for a lot of the developers, is that what they're doing isn't seen as simply producing a project. It's not, taking Tinker Toys and fitting them together and saying, oh, look, I made this thing. It's something that is more comparable to an art form, creating that. And the little note at the bottom here, I guess it shows it pretty well. Like composing poetry, as one of top three attitudes by participants. The other ones are based on degree of participant agreement with the statement, blah, blah, blah. With one more hour in the day, I would spend it programming. And as the more significant loss that you'll find is lack of sleep is one of the most significant kind of effects from what's going on. So the overall motivations, when you take it down based upon a motivational level, is the intellectual stimulation level, which works out interesting when you compare it against why people are doing it, is that a lot of, we'll see this later on, a lot of why people have identified it is not so much just for their individual benefit, but because they find that working with the other people is where they actually find a commonality of purpose, a commonality in thinking, and also a commonality in terms of the brain power behind it. Improving skill, which I think is one of the more interesting results as well, as well as the work functionality, is the fact that really those top three results are not ideological driven answers. They're not, you know, we have to call it GNU/Linux and here is the belief reason behind this. But they're a very practical reason that boils down to the person and why they're doing it. The code should be open is obviously a very high result, but it's the intellectual stimulation, the fact that they feel they become better programmers, better developers, and that they learn how to do it better is one of the, you know, are the top three reasons. The non-work functionality is another, you know, plays into it as well. The reciprocal reason, the obligation from use, is also an interesting one, because then what you've got is people who seem to be participating more or less out of a sense of guilt, which I find is an interesting reason to participate in a project, but hey, if it makes for more features, then I guess that I'm all right with that. The professional status is one that I think is interesting as well, is because as open source has gotten more successful, you find that people are more commonly employed by companies, and that also there's some interesting backdrop to that, that people who are unemployed are selecting to work in open source projects because it's something that helps them become employed, because it gives them something to point to and say, well, I did this, and you know, look at the work that I've done here. And the final one, the be proprietary software, is one of my favorite responses to show that how low that actual reason is. Because I'm going to hang this around my neck and see how this works. It really doesn't work very well. Excellent. So anyway, I'm even louder. I'm like the voice of God. So as probably a lot of you are aware, I spent a lot of time working with media, and nothing is more, I won't say nothing, but the media worldwide is a very interesting animal, because media eats its young. It's cannibalistic. The amount of creativity that actually goes on is amazingly low. Because what happens is you've got like three wire services in the world. You've got AP, you've got Reuters, you've got, you know, whatever Murdoch is doing, and then you've got Bloomberg. And these are fed into all of the papers. Yes, if it's a non-English speaking nation, there'll be some different, you know, some different feeds that come in. But the reality is most of the news that you're reading has been repackaged from one big source that the newspaper's paying $40,000 a month or something like that have access to. And so, because the fact that really media is kind of rammed down into these, you know, four organizations, what you end up with is that if you get one person who makes an idea, say for instance the perception that open source developers work because we really want to get Bill Gates, you know, we're going to get him, which isn't the reality at all. But what has happened is that the idea has become perpetuated, and so that's. I think that's an unfortunate result, is that some of the more fanboy aspects of things have become perpetuated through the media, because what the media is going to do is they look for the most inflammatory result, because that's the thing that gets readers, that gets interest, is because you don't want to have someone calm, you know, who just says, well, you know, I do this because I enjoy it and, you know, it's interesting. Instead, you want to get, you know, the guy's like, I'm going to go to get Gates and then I'm going to get first post and then that. So, I really like that one. and license forces me to. I think that's a very interesting result. Because if you take N, you know, as being 684 and you take 0.2, that means that there's actually a group of people who are working on it, not because they want to, but because they feel so obligated to work on it based on the license. But so now I'm not the voice of God anymore. All right, now. Well, you know, extreme power comes with extreme results. Actually, I think I can talk loudly enough that I'm not going to put this on. Can everyone hear me?
I'll speak from my diaphragm.
So percentage of response. Essentially, you've got 70% of people are working as volunteer, 30% are paid. Those numbers shift if you go into the mature projects because, you know, projects like Samba or, you know, Curl and things like that, you've got people who are interested in actually employing those people. Whereas if you are working on, you know, yet another DVD player, you know, for Linux, companies are significantly less interested in employing you for legal reasons and also because there's a whole bunch of you. Have you ever been financially compensated in any way for participating in this project? That essentially means that even if you're a volunteer, have you been flown to a conference by, you know, to come and give a speech, which would mean at some level that there's financial compensation. And what that, we use that because it's a way to weed out, when you're doing real statistical analysis, you actually have to, you know, take care of things like that and, you know, dot your I's, cross your T's, all that good stuff. Is your direct supervisor aware of your project participation? I really like that answer. It's kind of like asking, does your boss know how much time you spend on IRC? So the different motivations when we break down actually who's paid versus non-paid. The volunteers, you know, it's what's interesting is, well, the hugest one is work functionality, which is a dull result. You know, of course, if you're paid to be working on something, then you're hopefully getting work functionality out of it. Professional status also goes up. I mean, essentially, this goes up in exactly the ways that you would think it would. The interesting one there, even though it's just a 0.7 difference, is the beating proprietary software. But I think that's pretty easily explainable. If you are being paid to work in open source software, you are probably in some way, fashion, you know, trying to beat up proprietary packages. So you've got the motivation. Now, if you're working for MySQL AB, you are probably motivated to beat Oracle. That would be my guess. Open source reputation, you know, it drops down for paid people because, well, they're more worried about the professional status, and I think that's, you know, that's some of the reality of the job. Are there any questions, by the way, about how these numbers are derived at or anything? Yes. Can you speak up a little bit? Yeah, what we tried to do with this analysis is that we were using, we were using Stata to do the analysis. So we took, you know, the real far outliers and threw them out. And actually, this presentation does not have it in it, but the URL that I have at the end has the full, you can read all of the gory data about how everything was put through. Specifically because this presentation is, you know, designed for publication. It's part of Kareem's thesis statement. So, yeah, he had to do a lot of statistical analysis. I get to freeload off it. Yes.
Were your survey respondents allowed to choose more than one web version?
Yes. Yeah. Essentially, what we did is, essentially it's the top three motivators to go through and then, you know, give the break off. So interesting community breakdown. You've got the community believers who, the GNU / Linux, you know, it's the ideological side. You've got the hobbyist group. I mean, the interesting part is that community believers are the lowest amount of people. You know, the learning and stimulation people are the highest group by identification. Then you have your hobbyists who are, What I would say is they're doing it for non-work, but they're doing it to solve a problem that they have, you know, that they want to solve. And I think that in many ways is the more classic open source developer. And then you have the professionals who are doing it for work. Yes?
So are you saying that the people who do it for learning and stimulation aren't also community believers?
This brings it out a lot more fully. What you've got here is you've got, we did the identification based upon top responses there. So we've taken it off of those four different groups and looking at the big numbers that come out there. So, you know, you've got for the community believers, they are the only people even come close to them for learning and it are the learning and intellectual people. And again, the obligation from use is extremely high. The obligation from use, the motivation we're putting in here, the question is actually quite a bit different. But it's not worded so negatively, I guess would be the way that I would put it in here. So I think it's interesting just to, you know, that this overall slide is very interesting. You know, professionals, 91% work functionality, 80% paid for, you know, the contribution. The hobbyists are, well, they were pretty self-selected. You know, it's the non-work functionality part of it. And then you've got the learning and intellect side. But I think what's interesting is that these statistical clustering are so significant that you can, you know, that we feel able to break it down into four groups. It's important to note that this line was asked only of the mature projects, not of the alpha or beta stage projects. So most important, increased personal knowledge base, you know, which was, you know, 92.8% for the people who mentioned that, and 48%, you know, put it as their most important. Personal sense of accomplishment, other, which is a, you know, kind of, you know, well, it's a big bit, essentially. And then the improved reputation, job offers, all of those other things here. But, yeah, essentially the result that you get from this is that it's the increased personal knowledge that really drives a lot of people. And lack of sleep, sweet lack of sleep. Social time was obviously very close to that as well, and it actually has a higher mentions rate, but sleep was always identified as the single biggest thing. You know, people would say, I would rather not sleep for another hour and program for another hour. What's interesting is that, you know, the social time goes down. But actually, one of the things that we found in the more in-depth analysis is that a lot of people make the assumption that you know, open source developers, hackers, or whatnot, have basically no social lives. And what we found is that actually the social relationships, whether it be marriage or whether it be, you know, significant other, is essentially not statistically different from the overall population. So that's, I think, another, it's another one of those things where it's like the, you know, Lee Hacksor, who is, you know, identified as a hardcore believer, where it's something where, yeah, they're sitting in the basement, you know, with five pizza boxes, you know, next to them, you know, and that's all they do. But the reality is that isn't the, you know, that isn't the, you know, yes?
It's really similar as far as like having a significant other.
Yes.
Is it similar in regards to going out and meeting new people?
We didn't get it. We weren't able to get that in depth of things. Basically, people had to give. People responded with, you know, "Are you married? You know, are you in a significant relationship? Are you, you know, and things like that." So we weren't able to fully quantify like how many pints do you have today or anything like that. The community identification is something that was very strong with people. If you take those two together, even just the somewhat agrees, it's a huge amount of the self-identification, which is part of why shows like this succeed. And that's the thing is that in most of the rest of the kind of IT world, you can no longer get together these kind of volunteer-run programs that are put together by non-professionals. You know, it's the convexes and, you know, Linux worlds and things like that are generally the rule. And I think that the reason places like this succeed and everyone gets along so well is because of the strong self-identification of the community. This is a fun one. So basically the attitudes towards the community, next best thing to having good ideas is recognizing good ideas from others. When I prepare a program, it's like composing poetry or music. It's a matter of liberty, not price. With enough eyeballs, et cetera, et cetera. You know, these are a lot of the common statements that are made. And what's interesting to see is that it essentially reinforces the notion that the way the open source community works is it's meritocracy. It's pure leadership that is done based upon how skilled is a person. It's important to note below questions, you are allowed to choose up to three categories in this one. And that's why the percentages don't add up to 100. And then, but it's things like, classic hacker life and things like that are fairly low in terms of people's response. The open source is subversive. It's one that actually we would have removed, I think, or reworded after we went through this. We didn't do this one with the mature projects, but the open source subversive, it was originally what we were trying to get at is open source is a way of kind of changing the way that the world operates. And the wording was poor, but it's still interesting to see how many people have a vehement disagreement with that. Yes, that wouldn't have caused any problems. Age generation, so average age is 30, which again, it gets back to media stereotype is people, the average thing that people think of is, someone who's 16 is in a basement doing that, which isn't really true at all. It's something where the general open source developer is usually an IT professional who is about 30 years old and is male, almost exclusively. I disagree with this result. And Kareem and I had a lot of debates about this. And I based this off of psi anecdotal evidence. But Slashdot is an interesting example. If you take the Slashdot audience and you would just do a poll of how many people would identify themselves, you would get 95% male. The problem is that does not line up at all with the email in my inbox. And there's been a lot of studies that have been done about the difference in the ways that men and women communicate online. Women statistically are less likely to give away personally identifying data in a situation like that. And I think that is probably just as true for something like this. I'm not saying that we're half and half or anything like that, because that's not true. But I do not believe that it's 98% male. I think that the reality is it's probably somewhat much more down towards like 85%. Yes.
Speaking as a female special, what kind of fool would put down in their information on Slashdot if I was female?
But it's not just female. Your question is exactly right, but it's not just Slashdot. It is any sort of online environment. Women are much less likely to put personally identifying information down, precisely because of.
To answer that question, I know many guys that I did find.
But the age is an interesting result as well. And now we're going to wait for the machine to render, because rendering is fun. Oh, do you have a question? Yeah. What I think it's partially true. The other problem is that with the baby boomer generation is that the whole open source idea really became of age or was starting to be born around the time of personal computers. The reality is that someone like my father, for instance, did not grow up with a computer in the household, whereas I did. So, it's the same reason why when I go home to my parents' house, the VCR is flashing 12 all the time. It drives me insane. But it's a difference in what has been grown up with. Interesting note, the upper age that we found was, it's not even on the chart because it was a statistical outlier, was 70. But somewhere out there, there is an active developer who's 70, which I think is fantastic. So global enterprise. So this is, for all the Australians, you should feel very proud of yourself. Because Australia is not a large nation. Geography-wise, it is. Population-wise, it is not. But the Australian level is astonishing. It's 42 people, which if you took that percentage rise and you mapped it up against anything else, say then if you just took straight ramping up the population, the UK, I think, has a population of about 70 million, which is what? That's 3.5 or 2. So the Australian level is pretty astonishing. I was talking with a number of people about this before. I think part of there's an entire thesis work that can be done in that. I think the rest of the numbers are pretty well what you would expect. Now some of this is slanted by the fact that the survey was done in English, so you are naturally going to exclude the people who are non-English speakers. However, if you're using StoreForge, you probably have some English speaking ability. You may not be able to speak it, but you can read it well enough to get by here. The U.S. Yeah.
Just looking under Australia, you've got the some cities in Queensland mentioned separately. How do the numbers correlate with the total there? And why is Brisbane separated from Queensland?
Because what we tried to do was any sort of significant levels of cities, we did an identification one, and then Queensland people. This is basically just done off of their responses. And we had a fair amount of people who had just identified their city as Queensland. So evidently they have a very inclusive idea of the geography.
Queensland is an interesting situation. Only about half of the population actually lives in Brisbane. The rest of it live along north and south of Brisbane. So
right.
You can have a significant number who are in Brisbane.
Right.
Queensland.
Yeah.
Question.
Yeah. Were you in the? Well, there have been a number. So you heard from Kareem and all that then?
Sorry.
Kareem Makani. Well, because
yeah,
there's been
yeah,
a.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Well, you're the first one I've at any of these ones I've done who's admitted to it. The U.S. Essentially, the U.S. comes in with the top population-wise. Europe is coming in, second essentially, and then we've kind of got rest of world. I find that 42 number astounding, but that may just be me. One of the ones that I think is significantly underrepresented here is Japan. But Japan also has probably one of the largest language barrier problems. And also, there is a source for .jp. So that probably is part of the reason for that. So I would consider this slide to be interesting, but more for the talking value point than for, being able to draw any sort of hard and fast numbers off of it. Volunteer a lot of time. All right, we got 10 minutes left, so we're gonna go really fast. Okay, so this project, the interesting part about this slide is the fact that that we found there's a lot of people. Most people are not in just one project. They're in two projects or more. So, you look at the overall amount of time, we're talking about 14 and a half hours a week was the mean. That's a pretty astounding amount of time that people are spending working on this, because for some of them, it's it is a leisure activity. It's like we say, composing poetry or writing music, which I think is part of why people feel like they can put in this amount of time, because it is rewarding exercise for them. Singular project was 7.5 hours a week. Obviously, paid people tend to put in more hours because they're paid and they do it while they work. Which isn't to say that volunteers aren't doing it while they work, but boss may not be aware of that. The contribution to many projects, the mean is the mean of overall projects was 4.9. And then current projects, the average person involved in 2.6. It's kind of like, the nuclear family. Mother, father, 2.5 children. There's like the Far Side one where there's the two kids and then there's the other half child that is sliced right down the middle. It's an interesting vivisection project. The participants, mostly experienced IT professionals with an average of 11 years of programming experience. This will be interesting because I get to deal with Microsoft a lot. Microsoft is not really what people, a lot of people's perception of it is. It's a ginormous company. So you have entire fiefdoms who have very different views on things. But one of the, for instance, like their legal group at Microsoft was under the impression that if they released some code under the GPL, and then, but still, you know, they had the copyright, and someone, or rather, let me back up. If they released some code in a community source fashion, wherever the case might be, and that code was put into a GPL project, even if they were the copyright holder, then all the code was GPL. And so there is a serious perception problem within the company on how the GPL and open source software works. But one of the most predominant things that they will use to attack open source software is going to be the 18-year-old hacksaw but the 11 years of programming is a wonderful kind of counterbalance to that. Progression, project hours per week. The project creativity is the largest driver of effort. Basically, you cannot, the what is not, age makes no difference, job, who the founder is, what's your connection, are you based in the US, looking for functionality. What it is the creativity and professional status. The professional status for the volunteer only. This is, so if you haven't taken a bunch of statistics, regression is when you take a whole bunch of statistics and then you do some more other functions on it and it spits out the answer. And if you're interested in getting more about this, I would encourage you to download the full results. We've actually got two versions up on the website. High project creativity, people do it because they're interested in bettering themselves, for lack of a better way to put it. Peer leaders, all right, so we have 5 minutes. So everyone read that. Read it, yeah. Peer leaders, no one likes a dictator. So essentially the summary for the key motivators is, this is kind of bringing together everything we've talked about. My activity on this project improves my programming skills for learning and fun. I have a belief in Libre or free software or whatever the case may be for community believers, non-work needs, work and lifestyle. The learning and fun is an interesting one because they consistently identify percentage-wise that they would work for Microsoft, most likely to be a student, which, it fits in well when you figure out that they have the time and they need to be doing the learning and things like that. Professionals most likely have part of their job. They tend to be the most have the most extensive experience. Hobbyists have close identification with hacker community, whereas community believers not only closely identify, they are living it. The people, what's interesting is that they we're not talking about robots, the developers. They're finding projects to be as creative as anything they've ever done. That they really feel that they are part of something. And this is where you can get the presentation. All right, so the buzzsaw through the end actually gave us some time. Yeah?
Do you find as much migration from the early stages to the professional stages? Like, did those people identify themselves as?
We haven't been able to go back and do the follow-up studies yet. That's something that we're hopefully going to do, is to see if the learning and intellect people, if as they get out of school are moving into the professional stage. I would suspect that that will end up being the case, though. Yeah. The thing is that that may be true, that people wouldn't want it. But the reality is, it's like Sun releasing things or Apple releasing things. Is that in the open source community, it's more of a sea change for that one, because if that happens, then that's going to be an ongoing pattern. And the reality is they have 50,000 programmers. If they want to do something, they can they can bloody well do it. Yeah. What's the demographic? Oh, yeah, typically what you'll find is that in terms of the age, you will find for people, the difference is people who used to be programmers versus our programmers now, because if you take the overall demographic and you include people who had significant times programming but are now, you know, project leads and don't do programming anymore, the age shoots up by a number of years. But if you take people who are actively doing development, yeah, you'll still find it's Gen X, you know, it's 28 to 32, and it ends up being pretty, you know, pretty much the same. What's that? The age level and education and things like that tends to be about the same. The difference is the motivations. You know, you've got people who are doing it for creativity and such. This is, for those of you who are interested, this is some of the more detailed information and how all this stuff is broken down. K means clustering and all that fun stuff, but you'll find that all within the downloadable part.
In the actual survey, your other options is quite
the
number of voices.
Yeah, you could fill it in. Yeah, basically there were parts where people could put in their short answer responses, and that's where people would put in some of the, you know, the short responses. What's that? I'm not sure if that piece of data is, but if you wanted to get access to it, I can easily get that for you. Yeah. Floss has done it. Not. There is. What actually, yeah. Yeah, that's it. That, yeah. They, why is it different? Well, I think part of. Exactly, yeah. The two questions are often, you know, can really be tied together. It's why is this predominantly, if you do percentage wise population, open source is still a pursuit of white males. Right? If you just do a raw demographic study of it, that, I think that has a lot to do with the language barrier at this point. And I think that as the universities in, you know, India and Japan start to do real statistical analysis, they will find that changes. But in answer to the question with women, I don't think there's one thing done specifically on hacking, but I know that there's a number being done stateside for why is the percentage of women actually going into computers dropping. In the U.S., there's actually, like, if you are a female there are a number of companies who will give pay bonuses if you're a female who is a cis admin and you sign up. And I was in one of my comp sci classes, and it's one company basically give a $50,000 bounty if you are a female working in an IT profession. One of the guys in the class is like, well, this surgery pays for itself. But what's interesting is stateside is that, like, in the medical or legal degrees, women are now the majority. It's like 51% stateside. Whereas IT, it went from 15.9% 10 years ago, and it's down 14%. And it's the government is trying to funnel a massive amount of money into it and things like that, but no one has been able to really figure out the reason why. Yeah.
Directly on that subject, there was an article on Slashdot about this a few weeks ago, and there was actually about three or four people who commented who actually had the operation and were now with it.
Yeah.
So, I don't think they did it for $50,000.
Yeah.
Just one last question.
Yes.
With regards to the survey, it looks as though it was done prior to July last year. Since then, a few things may have developed. In particular, I'm thinking of the tremendous amount of extra effort that's putting into data. And also, surely that's actually going to have flow effects to the rest of the
Yeah, I think so. The problem, what will be interesting to see what happens, one of the other studies that we're working on right now with Kareem is we're going through basically all of the mailing lists that we we possibly can. We're identifying key people within the mailing list, building essentially the social matrix of how people relate, and trying to find how often people pop in and out of the mailing list, you know, how many people there actually are, to do a more complete analysis, you know, taking it beyond sourceforge.net then. And I think that that'll be one of the, when we actually get the results of that, that'll be one of the more interesting things, because that will kind of give an ongoing flow measure to see if the community is growing and how the community is growing at that point. So we're all set?
Yeah.
Excellent. Thanks for coming.